This is Off Planet Radio.
Welcome to Off Planet Radio. I'm Randy Moggins. The website is offplanetradio.com. This is part two of the interview with Duncan O'Finian and Miranda Kelly. This is being serialized over two segments over a space of a week on the internet. If you are grabbing these as they go out, the purpose of this is largely to give the information some time to marinate, give people a chance to hear it, and to consider the information rather than simply dumping what was effectively almost a four-hour interview, although we took out some gaps, we took out some technical glitches. The interview itself is unedited. There has been no editing in terms of removing any content. The flow of the interview, which occurred over a four-hour period, was extremely good, and a lot of the information that comes out in this interview is new information. There is also, as always, encoded information that if you listen carefully, you'll pick up the dynamic of. And we left off the last segment, which was released previously, talking about the Nephilim bloodlines and the fact that Duncan has revealed that he, Miranda, and in fact many of what are called the so-called super soldiers are in fact Nephilim bloodlines. And that goes into some very interesting questions that we pursue in this segment as we go through the Dark Wars, the coming battles on planet Earth with Duncan O'Finian and Miranda Kelly. We're going to commence the conversation. We're going to pick up where we kind of left off and conclude the Nephilim subject matter, Duncan.
The main thing that I'm trying to get across is there's good and bad in everything and everyone. And just because a person has angelic blood, which makes them Nephilim, doesn't mean they're evil. You know, there's evil and good Nephilim, just like there's evil and good humans, evil, bad and good dogs, cats, you know, so on and so forth, whatever you have. There's good and bad in everything. And there are Nephilim out there that are fighting for the human race. And quite frankly, that's what gives Miranda and I a lot of the ability that we have to do what we do is that Nephilim blood. And I guess I'm trying to figure out where to go towards, not grandiose, this is just straight up talking. We can talk about some of the things that you've witnessed while I'm sleeping or something.
Yeah, there are so many. It's really hard to, and they're all kind of running away from me, but one of the interesting things is when you leave your body and come back to it, when you travel wherever it is that you travel to, I woke up one night and I saw this, it looked like a little miniature comet. It was like this white fireball looking thing just come in through the ceiling, like, and land in Duncan, like just, and then he, like, his whole body kind of jumped about half a foot off the bed, and I just sort of sat there going, okay. But, you know, and I could see it with my the naked eye. Like, it wasn't a psychic thing or anything. It was this very lit up ball of light that came in and slammed into his body. So that was interesting.
And that one, and where I was, I don't know if I could bring this up or not, sound asleep, but yet another set of eyes opened up.
I was
going to
mention that next. Yeah, that was a night when I think it was my shift to stay awake, and I was just looking at your face, and you were sleeping, you were snoring, and I saw, like, it looked sort of like a hologram. It was a kind of a greenish tint to it, so it was like this transparent overlay. This other face popped out, and the eyes opened up, and, you know, I kind of startled back, and then I got really excited and happy because I thought it was the altar coming through. That was very weird. It was like a transparent overlay. And, you know, your physical body was still sound asleep and, you know, sawing Z's, but that was interesting.
And then on numerous occasions, the entire room will light up into this very, very bright white light, and the light's coming from my eyes, even though they're closed.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the most disturbing things to me. And I admit straight up, this is something that, and, you know, Randy knows this, I fought tooth and nail against this for years. I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to know nothing of it. I didn't want nothing to do with it. I fought it with everything I had for years. But there comes a time when you just have to accept it. And my rationale for accepting it was, if it gives us the juice to help others, I'll take it. And that's what it does. So I'll take it. And before we go into anything else, I think there's something that we need to try to explain. I don't know if I can do it adequately or not, but I will attempt it. In a lot of interviews, people hear Miranda and I talking about the Tron. The best way I can describe this, if you've ever been to New York, been down on Fifth Avenue, and you look at the red rectangle sign that gives the stock market data all the time.
The ticker.
Yeah,
right.
And it's in the digital red letters. I see something like that. I hesitate to say that my third eye, because I see it all the time. Most of the time, there's nothing there. But when it's meant to, boom, it starts flashing. And it will say danger, it'll say turn here, it'll say stop, so on and so forth. Well, when we're talking, it will also flash information. And from time to time, instead of it being that little rectangle up there, it opens up full screen to where that's all I see. And it feels like I'm being pushed back into the seat or wherever I'm sitting or whatnot, and the information comes so fast, I comprehend it, but I can't verbalize it fast enough. that's what happens a lot of times when I start to stutter or I feel people will hear, it's like, what's wrong? What's wrong with him? That's what's going on. I'm trying to verbalize what I'm seeing because it works faster in the mind and the conscious and the subconscious faster than my mouth can work. And that's what's going on. And where Miranda and I have this unique, fantastic connection, she knows exactly when to cut in and exactly what to say and when to say it. And I just wanted to get that out there.
And we're not sure where the information comes from specifically. Like,
we're not
about that a lot. And, you know, of course, our early theories were it's coming from one of the other personalities that he has. But as time has passed, and as we've gotten more information that's been really detailed and accurate, especially about esoteric things and the supernatural, we started to wonder, okay, maybe this is something else, somewhere else. And I think it's coming from a part of you, but I'm not sure. All I know is it's very handy.
It's extremely handy. It saved our butts on more than one occasion. We can say that. It's absolutely saved our bacon.
It has protected us many times and warned us of danger a lot.
You've kind of walked into a zone here, and I want to pursue this a little bit. I know that formally you're no longer talking about MK Ultra and about, I guess, what was your earliest introduction to the public coming out of Project Talent, but it leads me to question something that I've wondered for a while, and that is if what we're talking about here in terms of marking and tracking people has to do, and we know this, okay, let me back up a little bit. We know that the mysterious they, whoever they are, do track people by bloodlines. And based on your biography, which is detailed, which people can go look up the interviews on my website, they can look up the interviews that are done with, you know, other media outlets. This targeting of specific people based on genetic and biological traits, does this in your mind now lead you to believe that what they were really trying to do was exactly what I believe Hitler was trying to do as well? The whole, and I know you hate the word, I'm only using it because it's common parlance, the whole idea of super soldiers coming from the fact that they wanted to harness the energy of the Nephilim bloodlines. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, you're right. And that was something that him and I had talked about years ago. And we purposely kept quiet about it because our stories sounded fantastical. That's her word, not mine. I love that word. Enough the way it was. And we didn't know what to do with it. So we purposely kept quiet about it. But yes, we had known for a very, very long time that that's the reason that so a lot of us were taken into some of these projects was to co-opt that bloodline and use it for their own goals. The thing with that, though, is they underestimated us. and not just M and I, not just Miranda and I, but they underestimated a lot of us, many more people. And what we have also hypothesized, which has proven to be correct, that the alternate personalities were not actually alternate personalities that they embedded, but actually are real personalities per that bloodline. If that makes any sense. And in a great sense, we played them. They thought they had us, but in reality, we had them. And it scared the bejeebies out of them. And when we came to this rationale years ago, it scared the bejeebies out of us. But we are very analytical in our thinking, and we tear everything apart into a jigsaw puzzle and then put it back together. And when that puzzle comes back together, what you, the picture you got is the picture you got, and you have to go with it. And we are continuously getting updates from, let's just say, various sources. And these sources have never led us wrong. And one of them is only one of two other people walking the face of this planet I trust with my life. And two of those being on this call right now. And the other being my godmother. And when she says something, just like when Miranda says something, just like when Randy says something, take it for what it is, because it's dead on. It's straight up. Take it to heart. And when she says something, yeah, we take it to heart. It's straight up. So what you're saying is absolutely correct. And the whole thing with us not talking about MK Ultra anymore is actually because the MK part was the past. And there weren't enough people that cared enough about it to try and do anything about it. That's okay. We have the present and we have the future. You can't fix the past. Nothing can fix the past. So what we have to work on now is the present and the future. Everything from the past has led us up to now. And as Miranda and I were talking a little bit ago, what we're trying to do, and especially her, because we both have the same goals, but we have our individual goals. You know, we divide and conquer. We separate and do jobs. And as she was saying, what she's trying to do is find the best way to homogenize all of this to help the greatest number of people that are listening. And on my side is to try, with this interview, is just to get people to understand not all that glitters is gold, and not all that's dark is evil. If that makes any sense.
No, that makes complete sense to me. This again goes back for me to what I said. I think in response to some people who asked me years ago if I wasn't going into the dark side, and I said that in order to learn the truth, I was going to have to go into the dark. And I think a lot of people, especially religious people, reject that because they think of dark as evil, and they don't understand, as you pointed out earlier, that Creator is equal parts of dark and light, and that in order to comprehend the totality, you have to also comprehend both sides of the totality.
Yes. And appreciate how tremendous and how precious life is, you have to be walking on death's door, or, as we've done more than once, actually died and crossed over and been sent back, before you can truly realize how precious life is. And it all fits together.
Yeah.
Go ahead, honey. I feel it.
Oh, no, that was good. I think with the MK stuff, you know, what Duncan said is dead on. And especially about the present and the future. We have a calling. We have our work to do here. And yes, it has been informed by our past experiences, but our job right now, part of our job right now, part of our calling is to help people understand what's coming and help teach them about how to deal with it, because there really isn't anybody else out there talking about the true nature of the supernatural side of things, of the demonic, angelic side of things, and what that means in reality and practicality for people who are going to be, if not already, experiencing these things and having to fight them or deal with them or survive through them. There's really no template out there. Just look at the whole issue of demonic possession. There are a few facts out there, but there's precious little information, and that doesn't even take into account what we're moving into with the veil thinning. So part of our calling is to help people understand that, and it's a very difficult subject. It's very complex. It's very difficult for people to believe all of that, and so we struggle to try to bring as much clarity to our explanations as possible. So we feel like we're kind of muddling through this, but we're doing it so that people can understand how it applies to them. We're not just talking about vague philosophical concepts. There will be a practical application of this.
Well, and part of the problem is, okay, you're not, one of the reasons why it's useless to talk about MKUltra anymore is because you know and I know what occurred out there in the webosphere, so-called, was a trivialization of it, a bunch of imposters walking around, the whole super soldier summit bullshit thing that happened, and then, you know, all of the rinky-dink types that were walking around presenting themselves, and it basically diminished the impact of what you were actually trying to bring out.
Well, it was all orchestrated. It was all orchestrated and set up to accomplish that very thing. It was a organized campaign run against us for years with various groups of people all working towards the same goal, and then little old us. So what are you going to do?
But the net effect of it,
understood and stood up, great. That didn't happen. So we're moving
well on. The net effect of it is that the people who participated in that and the people who promoted it are the people who are now responsible for keeping people stuck in level one. I mean, what part of, yes, there was MK Ultra, and yes, they did all of these experiments, and there was Montauk, and there was all these other projects, and we're still talking about it, but we haven't done anything about it. So whereas people should be at level 5 right now just for survival purposes, they're stuck in level 1 in the woo-woo, and they're not moving out of that, and instead they go to conferences, and they go watch YouTube videos from a bunch of posers, ourselves. And the point of us doing this, and that's why I brought the subject up in the first place, is that we are legitimately trying to bring out information that is very difficult to parse, very difficult for you to present, and it's very difficult to digest, but people need to understand this stuff because of where we're at in time.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Absolutely.
I mean, this isn't a deal where I'm not sitting here blowing smoke, and I'm not trying to make ad hominem attacks on certain people. As I said in another part of this interview, it isn't personal because I don't know these people, but I do know who they are in terms of what they're doing, and we're calling bullshit, and then we're saying, look, you know, the whole point of what you were doing, of what we've done in doing all these interviews over the years, was to actually bring out information so that you had a backdrop for all the weird stuff that's going on maybe in your own life, or the stuff that's going to happen, or the things that you can't even process yet because you don't realize that all of this weird stuff, and it goes back to that saying on my website from D.H. Lawrence that we're in for the strange gods once more.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that's on the website. That's why I kept that on the website. Because, no, it ain't normal anymore. Normal is about to be redefined.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, and that just dovetails into everything that we've been talking about for the past couple of hours. What I'd like for people to think about for just a moment is this. For Miranda and I to talk about some of this stuff, it's not easy. However, I will say that talking about supernatural stuff and doing the things that we do now is easier than talking about some of the MK stuff, because with the MK stuff, we're talking about ourselves as children being tortured, abused, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, we've put that behind us. So when we talk about what we're doing now, it's still hard. I mean, we do stuff today. We did stuff a couple months ago. It's still hard for us to talk about, but it is easier. But with that said, we're not... I know what I want to say. I just have to phrase it just right. When we talk about the supernatural, the paranormal, the demonic realm, the angelic realm, et cetera, we're not talking about it from sitting on a computer watching YouTube videos and pulling up websites. We're talking about it from we've lived it, we've done it, we still do it standpoint. This is what we do every flipping day in one form or another. I like the way Miranda says it. It's our calling. That's exactly what it is. It's our job. It's our orders. It's our duty. This is what we do.
Well, and we're on the front lines experiencing it, too.
Yes. Exactly. And it really ticks me off to see so many of these people out there. And, you know, they have their TV shows and whatnot. Like these Ghost Hunter shows, Ghostbuster shows, Ghost Finder, whatever name you want to call them. Guys, if you ever went face to face with something, you'd crap your pants. You're full of it. Stuff just don't work that way. And as Randy said, everything that comes out, that is legitimate information, whether it's us with the MK stuff. After us with the MK stuff, then you had the rinky-dinks, you had the cash bodies, and so on and so forth, filling the internet and all and everything full of crap. Now, with the veil thinning and people experiencing all these different things, you've got all these multitudes of TV shows, and suddenly all these experts out there to muddle things.
With absolutely no field experience.
Correct.
I don't mean to harp on that, but, you know, it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to be sitting there having a demon, a demonically possessed person charge at you from across the street.
Yeah.
And know what to do and what not to do.
Exactly. And this
and
is why
nobody in their right mind should want to do what we do, because the more that we do it, the more they're drawn to us.
Well,
and it's really nasty.
This is one of the things that we wrote about in a recent post. You do this, if you do this, even once, you draw a target on your back. And when you do that, there is no going back. There's no do-over. There's no, oh crap, I didn't know what I was getting into. It's too late. You do it once. Life as you knew it is done. It's over. You walk into our realm, into our world. Our world is hell every day. So don't write us asking how can I get into this, because you're not going to get an answer. And we get that more times than you think.
And what I get is the email from people that want to know how to get out. And if people knew what I've done in terms of, I can't put on radio the people that I've talked to for endless hours and the people that have written me and sent information and, you know, they're in it. They're in it up to their neck. And, yeah, there's some things you can do to make it better, but like you said earlier, you're not closing that door again. This is going to be a lifetime battle now.
Well, it's like every time we do a job, let's say someone has a demonic attachment, and we get that demonic off of their back. We get that monkey off their back. Sooner or later, that monkey comes after us.
And its friends.
And all seven of its freaking friends. And its cousins and its sisters and brothers and so on and so forth. And the more you do of this, the bigger your list of enemies get and the smaller your list of friends become.
Yeah, it's real great when they start showing up every other time you go to the grocery store in multitudes.
Yeah.
You know, that's just a fact of life for us.
It'll freak you out. You walk into a grocery store, four, five, sometimes seven or more people turn around in unison all at the same time, and they look at you, and their eyes turn black. And you got to think, what the hell am I into? Why did I do this?
Well, and you're in public, and
yeah,
you know, you need to know, excuse me, the rules about how that works. Because, you know, if you, like that with the homeless one, you know, comes charging up at you, if you take any action on a public street, means if they're up there, people are going to be like, that chick just attacked a poor homeless woman. And you
exactly.
get thrown in jail. And they know that. And that's
so in that moment,
why they do it.
And in that moment, what it turns into is a silent spiritual warfare that nobody around you sees, except maybe you standing there, stiff as a board, fingers making certain symbols, our eyes turning silver or white, and the person across the street jumping up and down, screaming, cursing, spitting, crapping fire until finally it's over. That's called suffering alone.
Call, and if you lose that confrontation, it gets 100 times worse for you. So you have to you can't be flippant about this. There is so much at stake when you do this.
And it just gets my gall to see these pathetic little TV shows where these so-called experts, demonologists, exorcists sit down on a couch and calmly say, in the name of Jesus, we'd like you to leave this house now.
Please.
It don't work like that. That ain't the way it is. Ever. Never was, never will be. I ain't gonna rant about it.
Yeah, I know. Nothing.
No, but there's some points to be made here. One of them is this whole name of Jesus thing. That wasn't even his name.
No.
And it was an office called the Christ or the Christed One. Basically,
elected, yeah.
Basically, he was at the first order of the realms. And when he came back in a human form. And so that name is kind of meaningless without understanding the power behind it, which if you're in religion, you're not going to get that. Now, there are people, and I'm going to drive you into this. There are people within what we will call the church, the big tent, that do understand this, specifically certain priests and a very small number of what I would call deliverance people, and I've met maybe one or two that I think are legitimate, who understand this, but they're not exactly publishing it. There is no handbook for this. And I say all that to get you to the place, because this was covered in the interview that you and I did, Duncan, about where you guys began as you went out this summer on your missions, and specifically about the commission that you were given to operate as exorcists.
Right. Well, to build on what you just said, going with the name of Jesus, no, that was not his name at all. And Miranda and I
Go ahead. I was just going to say that field testing that in an actual exorcism was effective for me.
It was.
It damaged.
But yes. But at the same time, it was more your conviction, which is a point I wanted to make. It is the person's conviction and the person's will, the strength of will, that matters more than the name. If your will is strong enough, you could say, in the name of cardboard, I command you to leave.
That is true. That is totally true.
Because it always comes down to the power of will. Is my will stronger than the demon's will? Is my will stronger for it to leave, then it's will to stay. And that's where it becomes the fight between me and the demon. Whereas Miranda and I are a team, it is stronger than our will for it to leave. I mean, you can do a litany of names, but if it's not in you, if you don't have the strength or the power or the will, the names mean nothing. You can use every litany of names there is.
Yeah.
Now, what happened with us before we started all this, this past summer, is we went and we met with a retired bishop who we were basically, it wasn't recommended, we were told to go. It was almost like an order. We were told to go. And he ordained us as exorcists, even though we've been doing this stuff for a long time on our own. We were ordained as exorcists. And once he was finished, his exact words, and he looked us both in the eyes, and he said, "I admire you two, and I pity you two, because I know what you will suffer." And he was dead on correct about that. Now, that leads us into, Randy, as you were talking about with church people in the church, going back 2,000 years and maybe a little farther, going back through biblical times, using the name of Jesus, what was the one thing all through the biblical text, all through the New Testament, besides turning water into wine? Man, I wish I could do that. But besides turning water into wine, what was it he did all through his ministry in the New Testament? What was he known for? Casting out demons.
Devils. Yeah.
When he sent the 12 on their mission, what did he send them out to do? Cast out demons.
What does it tell you about the civilization at that time? That you know, I mean, just look back in history, and you realize that they literally had to send out an army of exorcists at that point because the populace was so infested.
Exactly.
And it's not lost on me that we're probably paralleling that period right now.
Yeah, I mean, do we think it's better than it was back then? Do we think that there's less of a need if it was that bad back then? I don't think so.
No, I don't either. I think it's on steroids now.
Yeah, it is. Because it's gone unchecked because the knowledge has been hidden, the knowledge for the need for it.
And here's the thing. He sent them out, and they were completely inept at that. I mean, they had he was in Gadara. They had to bring him down to take out the legion that was in the man who was in the rocks at Gadara, cutting himself on the rocks. And then he had to send the spirits into a herd of swine. And you ask yourself the question, these were Hebrews. What the hell were they doing with swine in the first place? And what was he really saying? If you were just to read the New Testament the way Thomas Jefferson did and just cut everything else out and look at what he was saying, because he says at one point, the demons cast out, the house is swept and garnished and clean, and when the spirit comes back, the man is seven times worse than he was before.
Exactly.
Well, that's a pretty flippin' heavy statement. It kind of says, you're not getting out of this real easy.
No, and that's what we tell people. When they call us in to do a job, we tell them, we'll do the job, but it won't be over. And then we'll do the job, and then we'll try to explain to them, we want to come after you now with everything, plus the kitchen sink. And then that's when we try to do the teaching part of how to, you know, how to protect yourself, protect your home, protect your family, so on and so forth, because you've been marked. You've been marked. And they will never leave you alone, ever.
Now, I had to sit next to one and get a freaking pedicure. That was all kinds of not fun. I'm serious. I'm sitting there, and it comes walking in, and I'm like, oh, no. And, like, my feet are in the water. Like, I'm like, what do I do? It was horrible, and it sat there, you know, making horrible noises and trying to taunt me, and I had to play it cool, because if you engage them, you better win, and all kinds of bad things, like I talked about, where, you know, that's what they want, get you arrested for, you know, attacking somebody. You can't be like, oh, no, I'm not attacking her, I'm just exercising her. It's all good. Yeah, there's a 5150 right there, at the very least.
No, I'm laughing because I remember the text I got from that.
Yeah, I texted him. I'm like, no.
Because I remember what I was doing. I remember what I was doing when I got the text. That was funny. That was hilarious.
It's hilarious. A little unnerving sitting there with someone going,
I know, but when you sent me the text, I'm at the pub and I got two other supernatural creatures ready to cross swords, and I'm thinking, okay, how do I answer this? Do I say, honey, I'll get back with you, or do I
just wanted a damn pedicure? Is that too much to
ask? This is something else people need to understand. We laugh our butts off at ourselves, because if we didn't, we have to. We
just cry.
Well, humor is the way that you deal with tragedy. I mean, it's ultimately, that's actually part of what makes us human. And if you've ever encountered those who are not human, you'll find out the distinction real quickly, because they don't have a frickin' sense of humor.
No, they don't.
Also, a protective mechanism, actually, because when you are around, when you are in the vicinity of one of these things, and this doesn't happen for everybody, but when we are, the energy field that a demonic gives off is incredibly toxic. It kind of eats your soul, and I'm not being over dramatic about that. You feel nauseous and ill, and like your life force is dampened a little bit. It's very strong. You can feel waves of energy, like when you open a hot oven and it comes out on you. There's that. There's the neck prick. So it is soul sucking. I don't know any other way to describe it. And so it dampens your field. Even just being near one for a few seconds will do it, depending on how strong the demonic is in them. And so the humor is very life affirming, and it brings up your energy, that whole laughter is the best medicine kind of thing. And so when we're able to, even if it's gallows humor, if we're able to joke and laugh about it, it helps heal that wound that inevitably comes from being in close proximity to one of them.
And it goes to what we've talked about with the aura. The aura itself is actually a supernatural shield to protect against things like this. And when you're in proximity of these things, that's what they do. They start banging away at the aura or the shield. So when you start laughing, you start boosting your own shield. And it's all about energy, vibration, math, music, so on and so forth, which would, you know, would be a 10-hour interview
music.
In itself. Yeah, exactly. And but it works. It works. And this has nothing to do with ghosts. I'll put that out there. It has nothing to do with ghosts. Ghosts are entirely different subject.
Although they have exposed as ghosts before in the astral.
That's true. Right. They will.
They have posed as a young child who needs help and start talking to us. And it's, who's that guy? I mean, Ralph Sarchi, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
He wrote about that in his book, too. He's had the same experience where they will pretend to be lost spirits or ghosts wanting help, and that's sometimes how they'll get into people's lives. So be very, very careful dealing with ghosts. It might not be a ghost.
I think the long and the short.
So you brought this up. I'm gonna insert something here. Because this has been pissing me off, and again, this is another one of those things where I need to be on record. Anthony Sanchez has been writing, the guy's a computer software programmer, has written apps now for people to put on their smartphones to go out and detect ghosts using radio signals. So, on Facebook, I kind of challenged him on this. I didn't push it real hard. I just wanted a little pushback on this. But I asked the question, why would you even want to do this? And it immediately was another one of those polarizing conversations that pissed a whole bunch of people off because they thought I was attacking him, and I wasn't. But I was attacking the concept of what he was doing. And I said, if you don't have the physical discernment to go out and sense entities with what you carry around on two legs, you have no business going out there and doing it. And putting an app on a smartphone just makes this one more glistening little jewel in people's endless fascination with shit that they don't understand. And I have a real problem with it because they don't know. Again, you open these doors, you ain't going to get them closed. And if you're one of these people drooling over your smartphone looking for a ghost, you're screwed.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was going to say. Just having something like that's like somebody running around with an EMF meter that has no clue what to do. It's like a lot of these people in these TV shows get go out and call out a ghost or a demon, and then they run when it shows up and say, oh, well, we found something. Now, if you need us, call us, and they're out of there. It's kind of the same damn thing. I think what Sanchez is doing is grossly irresponsible. And I think he is culpable in whatever comes down from it, knowingly or not. This is stuff you just don't you don't do.
I understand people's curiosity and fascination with the subject matter because I feel that it deep down intuitively people have sort of a genetic memory of a time that was different where this stuff was known about and taught, you know, learned about from the elders and whatnot, and some kind of fight or flight instinct that tells them this is important, and it's very interesting. The problem is nobody, again, the information about how to safely deal with this, how to protect yourself, how to fight, has been deliberately hidden, and wrong information has been given out. People just, they are responsible for their actions, but a lot of people don't know any better, and that's done totally by design as well.
Well, it's like the fifth rule of magic. Don't summon that which you cannot send back. And with these phone applications, you're basically summoning something via electronics and technology that the individual has no clue how to deal with or send back.
The idea that you can do this is not new. I built crystal radios when I was a kid. And you know me, I'm kind of an electronics freak, and I build stuff, and I play around with stuff. I knew then that it was possible to get spectral entities on a radio transmitter, and especially crystal radios, because they're highly sensitive and they're highly tunable. This is still not something you want to play around with, but my point is that there's a danger in digital electronics that people don't understand, because they don't understand the concepts of the spectrum of signals that are coming even through their computers. They don't understand that these phones we're walking around with are electromagnetic transmitters and receivers, and that our bodies are being turned into parabolic antennas. Well, that goes into a whole other level that takes the emergence of technology and the human biology, because now you're hyper-charging a biological parabolic antenna. And I interviewed a man in Canada who I consider to be a legitimate paranormal researcher, a guy who's going out in the field named Richard Palmisano, who has the Searcher Group in Canada. And Chris Holly and I interviewed him, and he was very, very emphatic in his warning about amateurs trying to do this kind of stuff and what he went through. This guy actually went to a priest after he went into a haunted property, and the priest turned against him and then turned around and burned the church and walked away. That's how dangerous these entities are.
Yes, sir.
That interview is on my website. You can search it. It's Richard Palmisano interview, and he talks about this. And the man was genuinely respectful of the forces that he was dealing with. And
he's absolutely correct about that. You have to be respectful of what you're dealing with, especially in this.
And so a lot of what we're bringing out in this interview tonight is part of the overall training. Folks, this is a training session. It's random in some ways, and it's kind of scattered because it's difficult to pull all this stuff together. But part of your survival is going to come into understanding how to deal with things that you've not encountered before. And to trivialize this and to turn it into some sort of game with digital phones and an app on your phone is really dangerous. It really trivializes it, and it's highly irresponsible. And thanks to you guys, you gave me the opportunity to open up the conversation about this tonight, because I've kind of been loaded for bear for a while over this subject.
Okay. It's a dangerous subject.
It is.
It's an extremely dangerous subject, and I would caution anyone phrase this just right. What we do and what a great number of others like us too, because we're not the only ones, we're not unique in all this. Let's put that out there out front. We're not unique in this. This is not for amateurs. This is not for thrill seekers. This is not just for the curious. Unless you have had a legitimate calling, unless this is something you have been born to do or born into, stay away from it. Stay the hell away from it. And leave it for those who were. Or it would get you killed. for worse. As John Storm said, there are things worse than death. And that is not an exaggeration.
It's called the second death.
Absolutely. It's not a game. It's not a TV show. It's not a web. It's not a YouTube web video. It's serious stuff. It's life and death. Not just your life and death, but the person you think you might be helping. Because when you take on a client, when we take somebody on, when they call us or they write us and we travel 1,000 miles or whatever it is, we go and meet with them, we fight for them, we are responsible for them. If we lose, they lose. We're responsible for that person's soul. And that is not something to be taken lightly. That is of the utmost seriousness. More serious than anything you've ever thought about. If it's not for you, stay away from it. Just stay away. That's all I can think about to say about that.
That's good. True. Although I think some people, especially in the future, the near future, they're going to be encountering this stuff whether they like it or not.
I totally agree. But if they can't take it serious, if they cannot see the long-range ramifications of that of which they do, then they need to give it over to an elder.
Absolutely.
Because it's not just you. It's the person you're trying to help. If you lose, they lose. You may still be here, but they'll be gone. Their soul will be gone. Because when you do what we do to help someone else, you better know what you're doing, and you better be willing to die for someone that you just freaking met. Maybe you sit and talk to them for an hour and got the lowdown on what's going on, and then you start to fight. This is somebody you don't even know that you're fighting for, because it's the right thing to do. And if you lose, they lose. You're gambling with their soul. And that's shit that you got to live with every day of your life. And that's what we have to do. That's one of the reasons we don't sleep. And like Miranda said in a fleeting comment about an hour ago, when she said it was her turn to be awake, we sleep in shifts. So the other can protect the other. That's how dangerous this game is. And that's why the bishop who ordained us said, "I admire you and I pity you for that which you will go through. That which you will undertake." And I'll say it again, he was dead on right.
Well said.
Thank you.
I want to move the conversation a little bit here, and based on the narrative that Duncan describes, over this summer, as you were obviously traveling thousands of miles to do your assignments, there was this ominous picture that Duncan painted to me in the previous interview of this darkness. And even as he was describing it, I was getting chills, and I was actually getting flash visions when he was talking about it. Can we go into this a little bit? Is this something that you can talk about?
I can now. This is where I got in trouble.
Okay, I knew I was on thin ice here, but I felt like I needed to try and frame it up and see if you could go there.
No, we're pretty much free and clear now. If I kept my mouth shut and waited a few weeks, we'd have been okay. But no, you know, it's me. I got a big mouth. I'm Irish. What can I say? It's the coming darkness, and that has to do with what we talked about earlier with so many of the fallen being released from their chains. And the biggest and the baddest of those is Azazel. Now, just as the dark side, and I'm using that term very loosely here, just to distinguish between who's who. But just as the dark side must pronounce their plans, and they do it through media, movies, TV shows, etc., etc., Miranda and I just say it straight up. Azazel has been released from his chains. This, how can I say this? Azazel makes Lucifer look like a kindergarten child. When you go back to the beginning, Lucifer fell on philosophical principles. Azazel fell just because he's a son of a bitch. And straight up, this is the way it has to be said, because we don't have mass media, we don't have TV shows, we don't have script writers. So we have to say straight up, my job is to take on Azazel and take him out. Azazel is the power behind CERN. Azazel's got to go. And I've been tasked with taking him off. That will not stop the coming darkness, but it'll make it a little more gray than black if I win.
Yeah, and that was a question that I'd asked you in the first interview, if this was tied to CERN, because this goes back to all of our previous interviews as well. It may be interesting for listeners to note, too, a confirmation on this, because I pulled up the reference. Show I did February 15th, 2012, with a group called the Chronicle Project up in Canada, who have been doing retranslations of Hebrew scriptures, because what they said was basically that the Hebrew translations were completely screwed. And in that interview, Chris Tyerman, who's the head of the Chronicle Project, talks about the return of Azazel. This is in 2012. So, you know, people might want to go look at that, because you are not the only person talking about this, Duncan. It's just that you are coming at it from a first-person perspective, which is obviously just beyond frightening. But also the fact that researchers have been looking at this, and there are people out there who have studied this and can confirm exactly what you're saying.
Well, like I said, Azazel is the badass of the fallen. He's the worst of the worst.
Well, and this goes back to the Book of Enoch, too, by the way.
It does. Underneath Azazel would be Beelzebub. Lucifer barely makes the top five, in all honesty. As bad as Lucifer is slash was, he barely makes the top five. And this is something that so many none of the Christian churches that I know of, and that includes the Catholic churches, the only ones that I know that even talk about this are the old traditional Catholic churches from Pius V on back that even give reference to any of this.
You mean like the pre-Vatican II?
Way past that. Way past World War One, going back that far.
You mean, Malachi Martin fall into that category, do you think?
Malachi Martin was a breed unto himself. Malachi was way beyond his time. Malachi Martin was a Jesuit, yes. But not everyone who's a Jesuit is an evil son of a bitch.
Exactly. We're back to this again.
And Malachi was a genius. The man spoke, and not only spoke, but wrote and understood seven different languages. So he was so far above the curve of all of the modern theologians out there, it was being funny. And Malachi Martin was one of the first ones to publicly talk about the thousand-year reign. You know, where it talks about in the Bible that Christ would rule for 1,000 years, and then Lucifer would be loosened from his what is known as a short season, in which he could go out and prowl the world for souls once again for a short season. Then he would be cast in chains and on down so far. Okay. Going beyond that, Malachi Martin was the first one to talk about 1,000-year reign depends on who has control of the most souls. He was the first one to publicly state that. That it could be the bad side that ruled for 1,000 years, which in biblical terms, 1,000 years just means a damn long time. It could be 10,000 years. It could be 50,000 years. Because in biblical terminology, 1,000 years was as high as they went. The number 1,000 was as high as they ever went. That was the highest number. So Malachi, who was also one of the few privileged or cursed to read the true third secret of Fatima, and what he publicly stated was take the worst vision you could ever have and multiply it by 100. That was the third secret of Fatima. Not the Pope being shot and surviving. It had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, that's the comic book version.
That's the comic book version, yeah. And I've been on public record more than once by stating that John Paul II, all the way through his life, was and always was a very accomplished actor.
Yeah, he was basically the counterpart to Ronald Reagan.
Well, people who are jumping up and down, clapping hands about John Paul II need to go back and read the authors of Vatican II. John Paul II, the Bishop of Poland, Karl Wojtyłowicz, wrote Vatican II. He was the architect of Vatican II. He was the great apostasy. So if you want to go on biblical philosophy and all that, that part has been fulfilled. That part of prophecy was done. He was the great apostasy. But Malachi Martin was killed. Yeah, I said it. He was killed for what he was putting out. For what he was putting out publicly. And he was, quite frankly, the best exorcist of the 20th century. Because he had the gift of being able to see. So I don't know how I wound up on this, but we did.
You wound up there because I pointed you there, because I don't think at this point, you still there? Somebody just hit a button. Okay, good. I get nervous when that happens. And the Asian pear wine is kicking in. But my point was to try to build on the existing body of evidence, because you know as well as I do, when we release an interview, you're going to get assailed. I'm going to get attacked. People are going to say, Duncan's full of shit. He's self-aggrandizing. All the usual yada, yada, yada stuff. But
of course,
this is as serious as you can get in a subject. I mean, this is the path I've been going down for a decade. So I'm trying to pull threads together that people can make their own conclusions about the evidence that's an offering here, which, you know, then goes into CERN. And it's funny because I just heard an interview with another talk show host who's talking now about CERN opening up vortexes and the fact that they are conjuring entities. Stuff that we talked about, what, 4 years ago, however long it's been.
4 or 5 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at that time, that was completely exotic. And now, there's people that are talking about it because it's out there. And this information needs to be collated and put together. And it's not just Duncan saying it, but it was Duncan saying it when nobody else would say it.
Yeah. Yeah. CERN. Okay, honey, I'm going to trust you to cut me off before you think I say too much.
Huh. Oh, boy.
CERN right now is the most scariest thing on this planet. I'm going to walk a very, very thin line here. And I'm going to try not to cross it over. In order for CERN to work, there has to be another portal on the other side. Now, the other side is what we call hell. It's one of the nine realms. It is the lowest of the nine realms. It is not a nice place. I've been there twice. And I am not ashamed to say it. I begged to come back. That's how bad it is. The whole idea was CERN, and Aleister Crowley was part of CERN. The Philadelphia experiment was part of CERN. And here's something we never said before. Stonehenge was part of CERN, going back all those thousands of years.
Well, and I'll back that evidence up. I'm reading right now, I'm rereading The Grid of the Gods by Joseph P. Farrell, who I've interviewed before. Farrell's talking about the Nazis using Stonehenge as a geomantic grid to basically set up a world empire.
Yes.
Prior to actually doing this, right before and immediately after the time that Hitler came to power in Germany, he had some of the most powerful people working on the grid lines and mapping at Stonehenge in order to use geomancy to wage the campaigns of the Blitzkriegs.
Yeah, that's why he bombed London. He needed to get everything and everybody pushed away from Stonehenge at that time so he could go back. So he was going to Stonehenge before the beginnings of World War II. But people don't understand. Hitler was doing this stuff years and years before the beginnings of World War II. This was decades being played out. But Stonehenge, thousands of years ago, was part of CERN, was part of trying to merge us with hell, two different dimensions. And this goes back to the second Thor movie, which you and I talked about before, where they say what they've got to say, they put their information out in multimedia and movies, TV shows, etc. We just come on here and say it flat out. For CERN to work here, there has to be a connecting portal on the other side. That's how it works. The two connect. The amount of energy that's being used can only come from souls. That's why right now the push, the darkness, becoming greater darkness, to get control of human souls, to use them as energy to power the two portals, to connect the two dimensions, pull them together, make them one. And it doesn't stop there. They don't just take two. They actually, if they pull this off, they will actually take three. And then the goal is to go right on up. Take the mythology out of everything. Earth is what is called Midgard. Midgard, or Earth, has the importance that it does, because it is the only place in the other nine locations that you can get to the other eight. It's the only place that has openings to go up, down, left, right, forward, and back. You can't do that from any of the other eight. That's why Earth, or Midgard, is of such strategic importance. That's why they want it so bad. And human souls are and will be used to power these machines that are not only powered with electricity electromagnetism, but also with dark magic. The goal is to go right on up into the angelic realm, to where you have nothing but a dark universe ruled by evil, what we know is evil, to be ruled by darkness throughout eternity. That's the end game. And I didn't get cut off, so I guess I didn't cross the line.
Well, you just tied a lot of data points together. A lot of data points. And I would just say people are going to have to go back through that narrative again and then trust their intuition to help them connect the dots, because I was standing here and my jaw's hanging open. And I've got goosebumps, and I'm getting those flashes again, because you pulled together a whole bunch of critical data points that tie together every interview that you and Miranda and some of the other folks that we've done interviews with, including John Storm, have talked about for, you know, the last 5 years.
I guess I gotta figure out how to say this so it comes out just right. And when I go really slow like this, it's because I know I'm walking that really thin line. The information that Miranda and I have concerning everything that we've been talking about has never and does not come from watching anyone else's interviews, listening to anyone else's interviews. This knowledge comes not only from within, but from sources, that's to say, much higher up than we are. You know, we've been talking about the angelic realm, and underneath the angelic realm is the high elven realm, and so on and so forth. I'm being told to shut up on that, so I'll stop. I want this interview to go out, so I'll stop. I'll follow orders for once. How's that? Bring it down to Reader's Digest condensed version. It's worse than anybody ever thought. And it encompasses much more than anyone could ever believe. That's how important this is.
Miranda, is there anything that you want to interject into this dialogue at this point?
No, I think Duncan said it so perfectly and so succinctly, given the subject matter. I'm very, very glad for that. This is something we've talked about for a really long time, something we've been getting information on for a really long time, and like he said, it's time for us to put it out in as cohesive a way as possible, and I think he just kind of knocked it out of the park there as far as clarity goes, and I hope people understand, like, how important this is. It's really important. And those who are meant to will, I know. But he says none of that lightly.
No, I've been feeling, and I've been feeling constrained in the questions I've asked and the way I've framed them. As we've gone deeper and deeper into this interview, I've kind of, you know, there's a lot of thoughts that are coming across my mind, but I, like you, I'm kind of being circumspect about the way I ask questions and what questions I ask, because I understand that we're still under certain constraints, which a lot of people weren't going to understand. People don't, you know, most people were really very good about this, but when I pulled down the last interview, there were people that were kind of pissed off at me. And they're like, well, who's telling you to take these interviews down? And I said, when I posted it, I said, the deal is that certain shows have come down, and I won't say any more about it, and I refuse to say any more about it. And I had people that wanted to send me private links, that they send them private links and all kinds of things, and I went, no. I went, you know, that show was there for a short time. It was pulled. If you got it, you have it. Do not post it. And I will not say any more about it, because I understand that this information is being allowed to come out in measure for reasons that most people are not going to understand.
We may not even understand all the reasons, actually. We just know.
No, I don't claim to understand it either. I'm not. But I have a sense of it, and I've had a sense of it for the last 45 minutes as we've gone down this tunnel, about being very cautious and at the same time trying to frame things in a certain way that we could put information out without compromising the interview.
Yeah, and I take full ownership, you know, of that last one.
And that's not even the issue. I mean, this is the way it rolls.
I was being given the warnings to shut up, and I overrode them. And then, you know, when somebody shows up in your face and just like, oh, crap. You know, when that happens, it's like, yeah, okay, pull them, you know. And that's the way it goes. And sometimes my mouth... Because I feel so freaking passionate about the right of the human race to freaking survive. I am that damn passionate about it, because I know that the human race has not had a fair shake. They have not had a good deal. And I feel passionate enough that the human race has shut up, has a right to survive on its own accord, because it has been meddled with, it's been jacked with, it's been screwed with by racists outside this solar system, by interdimensional creatures, by every freaking thing in the book. The human race hasn't had a fair shot. It hasn't had a fair chance. And it deserves a fair chance. And Miranda and I have been beat down, stomped down, spit on by the human race, by the worst of the human race. And with all of that, we find no blame in them. There's no blame. Because it's the other people, the other entities that are to blame, not the human race. It was never intended to be this way. And sometimes my mouth overruns my judgment, and it gets me in trouble. And I pay for it. That's my passion, that's my belief, that's my fight. And I'm willing to pay the freaking price. That's my rant, I'm done.
Well, from my side, you know, from the time that you and I first talked, my interest has basically been to give you the platform to bring out the stuff and do it in a way that it was not... It wasn't commercialized, it wasn't dramatized, and it wasn't colored in any way. So, you know, these interviews, when we release them, will be basically unvarnished, and as much as possible, we will not edit, so that people get the sense of this as well. This is not entertainment. People who are entertained by this, I would caution you, you're operating from a wrong premise, because this is not entertaining. It is stuff that's actually very critical information that's going to make a difference if you heed it or if you don't heed it. And we trust that the people who need to hear this information are going to hear it. Because obviously, we're not going to blow this out on Fox News. I mean, this is, you know, and I've said this before, this is level five, whereas most people are barely at level one right now. And I'm only talking about the so-called awake and aware crowd. I'm not even talking about the general public. My goal is to create a pivot of probably, you know, I don't know, a fraction of 1% of the population that will be operative when all of this stuff goes down, because somebody's got to know what to do. And it's going to be a small, tiny number of people. And I think we all have a sense about that, that it's a tiny number of people, and that aside from the people we know, there are other groups and there are other individuals that are operating that will emerge during that time that are hidden right now. And I think we're all hidden to some degree. So that kind of spells out for me the mission statement of what I view my role as. I'm just the guy with the tape recorder right now.
Well put.
And I think that's exactly the call for here. No frills, no bells, no whistles. You know, the information just needs to go out in as pure form as possible, and it's really nice to be able to do it that way.
And this is one of the things that we appreciate with doing. I don't even consider these to be an interview. These are just, in my mind, recorded conversations. And that's one of the things that we appreciate about these so much, is they go out raw. We don't sit here with scripts. We don't sit here with bullet points. We don't do that. You know, there's no scripted questions. There's no scripted answers. Sometimes
something we built on for the past however many years, which is really nice too.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that the three of us just don't give a shit. I mean, I'll put that out there. The three of us have been through so much in our respective jobs. With everything that we do, we just don't give a shit. You know, we have a goal in mind, and we have the juice or the energy to accomplish that goal. And if you're not part of helping us accomplish that goal, get out of the way. Go sit on the sideline like you're good at. Because we got a freaking job to do. And it's not just us. When we talk about Grey Walkers, it's not just the two of us. We're not the only two. There's a lot of us out there. Not enough. I don't think there's enough. But there's a lot of us. And if anybody out there starts saying, I'm a Grey Walker, No, you're not. No, you're freaking not. If you weren't born into it, if you weren't chosen for it, and you weren't put through the fire, no, you're not. Because I'm going to put this out here, and I was kind of leading up to this, and I'm willing to say this, but instead of going on talking about symbols, we can do that another time. People have no clue what it is to be gray. Yeah, it means fighting darkness. Yes, it means fighting evil. Yes, it means standing there, going against the odds, or there's one of us sometimes. See, people need to understand, yeah, Miranda and I fight side by side. We fight back by back. But we also fight separately. We have separate things that we have to go do 1,000 miles apart. She's on her own, I'm on my own. But at the same time, it also means fighting an overzealous light to try and keep that balance. And sometimes it also means taking orders that tell you to stand down and watching innocent people die, because it means keeping the balance. Even though you know what's on the other side, you know they've moved on to a much better place. Even though you know that, watching them die, knowing that they've died, when you could have stopped it, you could have saved them, but you were ordered not to. You have to live with that. You got to put it behind you. And you got to move on to the next day. You got to move on to the next job. You got to move on to saving the next person, or blowing up the next building, or in some cases, blowing up the freaking Washington Monument. You have to live with it. And sometimes looking in that mirror at 4 o'clock in the morning is the hardest part of the day. It's not easy. If there was a hell on earth, we lived. And we do it to keep the balance. Because without balance, there can be no light. There can be no dark. There can only be chaos. So don't say you're one of us when you're not. To me, that's blasphemy. Because we walked through the fire. And I promise you this, if you are one of us, you're a teetotaler, that will change.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say now. I'm sorry.
No, I think that was...
I don't think I'm sorry needs to even be included there. You know, I think what you just brought out is, you know, it frames the context for all of this, and there are people that need to hear that. Look, I said it before. There's a lot of posers out there right now. There's a lot of pretenders. A lot of people, once they step into the fire, they're going to melt like wax. And I personally wouldn't want to put myself in that position. I got to say this. For as many times as I've been attacked, there are 20 that I wasn't. So I have some protection. And I'm grateful for that, because I'd be the first person to admit that I know my own limits. And knowing your own limits will keep you alive, too.
Yes.
Yes, it will. And on a semi-lighter note, and I know there are those out there claiming to be one of us when they're not. I've never seen your name in the ledger. And I, in all honesty, I happen to be very well acquainted with the captain of the Greywalkers. And I've never heard him call your name. So if you think Don Shipley's bad on the fake Navy SEALs, you haven't seen her pissed off. But I have. Be very careful what you say concerning this. You will get a visit, and it will not go your way. This is beyond earthly understanding. The Grey Walkers borderline on angelic understanding. And I think I need to stop.
I think that would be good.
I think that's probably a pretty good place to wrap it up. I'd love to go into the symbols, but let's plan on doing that down the road a little piece. These interviews go out and kind of marinate into the webosphere, and then come back and do the symbol thing, because that's a whole separate thing that we've had some background conversations on it, and I've actually been doing a fair amount of research on it because I've gotten interested in it as well. And it'll you know, later on, I think once people hear this, they'll come back with maybe a different understanding that will frame that.
works for me.
Okay, well, Miranda, I your presence was strong tonight in this interview, even though I would have wanted to hear more from you, but I hope we will. Anything that you want to say?
Absolutely. I Duncan and I talked about this before tonight, and I, like I said, we've been talking about this for so long. I really just wanted to sit back and let him say what needed to be said in the way that it needed to be said, and all I really wanted to do tonight was just kind of help facilitate that if I could and try to put myself in the shoes of somebody who was listening to this and, you know, needing clarity on something or another. I'm trying to occasionally, rarely guide it so that it would be understandable to people. So I'm really happy and relieved that he finally was able to get this out. I'm just happy.
Well, and as with most things, you know, a lot of what you do, how do I put this? A lot of what you do has to do with the energy that you bring into it that's almost silent and almost invisible, but yet is it's a force on itself. And people who have met you know that. And like I said, it was felt very much. It's a very different interview with your presence. And, you know, I just wanted to, you know, give you a chance to say anything that you wanted to say. But knowing that your role is already fulfilled and that you've been doing the work in the background as well.
Well, thank you. That's really sweet. Yes, it is. I'm good. I mean, I'm about ready to fall over, but in a good way.
Me too, and I drained the bottle of Asian pear wine, so.
That sounds delicious. I've got to try that. I love pear cider. Perry cider is
amazing. Well, if you ever get back here again, I'll try to have another bottle of this. This was sitting around for a couple of years, so I decided over Thanksgiving to pop it open. And this is the...
I'm going to hold you to that.
This was what was left.
Well, two things real quick. Miranda is the voice of power. That's what was given to us a long, long time ago. She's the voice of power. I'm the staff of power. You separate us, we're nothing. We only work when we're together. And you better get a couple of cases of Guinness because we're coming.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I am really looking forward to that.
We got some work to do.
Well, you're deeply missed, you're deeply loved, and deeply appreciated for what you brought out in this interview. And I think we'll just sign off. I think we'll just sign off with that. And as I always like to say, the truth is out there. It's inside you. It's not in somebody else. And that's where you find your power, the inner voice. This is Off Planet Radio signing off.
You are listening to Off Planet Radio at offplanetradio.net and offplanetradio.com.